Welcome to the Cult Film Showdown's special series on the 1980s TV show, The Hitchhiker. My name is James Cotta, and I am joined by Nick Boxer.
That was my tough guy Nick Boxer voice.
Name like Nick Boxer. I'm sure that more than one playground fight came out of that. And also, Jack Hall is here.
I never had a playground fight because I would run away. I don't mind saying it.
If you ran away from a fight, no one cares. And if you are still talking about a fight you had in sixth grade, probably got not a lot else going on.
Hey, she was
had this fight in sixth grade.
And I kicked that kid's butt. So you're telling me a story about when you kicked a 12-year-old's butt?
Yeah,
I mean, we're 12, but that still doesn't seem.
No, I was 18. And that 12-year-old didn't know what hit him. Came up from behind and everything.
he was my paper boy, kept hassling me about $2.
Anyways, nobody wants to hear about my history as a criminal.
Well, we're on the backstretch of The Hitchhiker. The Hitchhiker was a show that ran on HBO in the mid-1980s. It was a TVMA, is what we call it now. It was an adult program, ran a half-hour anthology. And I've been meaning to ask this question since we began. Have you guys ever hitchhiked?
No. I like having my head attached to my shoulders.
Well, it depends how you define hitchhiking. I've been watching The Hitchhiker here. And if it means walking where there's no cars, I have done that.
Yep,
this is true. There's a lot of him walking around, not actually hitchhiking.
That's true. We saw one episode where he got in a car, though, didn't we?
Yeah, he got in the back of a truck and they didn't
remote
back of a truck. Right. I think that's it.
That's the most hit. At that point, you're just walking backwards occasionally. You're giving drivers a thumbs up and changing up things by walking backward.
Most of the time, there's not even a road where he's walking.
Hardly anyone hitchhikes now. They don't teach you that.
This episode, he's in the middle of the city by flowers, picking them up and smelling them and stuff like that. Very far from hitchhiker behavior.
Another tip, inside an urban center, bad place for hitchhiking.
Hanging out between two parked cars, bad spot for hitchhiking.
Well, I mean, you're micro-targeting, I guess. If you just buy two cars, you can really make your pitch.
You're making me laugh so hard I'm coughing.
I did hitchhike a few times when I was a kid, and I don't recommend it, to be honest. But it was a good way to walk a really long distance and then have someone who wants to chat pick you up.
I was always thinking that would actually be the issue. Would be. If they pick you up, you have to talk to them. And what if they're very boring?
And that is why they picked you up. All right. So the episode we're doing of The Hitchhiker this time out is Man of Her Dreams. I believe this one was chosen by you, Jack.
It was.
A story.
I was responsible for this crap.
I'm looking forward actually to the... can't wait till we get the explanation of the story from
Nick,
because maybe then I'll understand what I watched. And here's the thing. I chose this. Philip Noyce is the director, Australian director, directed Dead Calm just a little bit before working on Hitchhiker. This is the fourth of four episodes he directed that season. And he would go on to do The Saint, Bone Collector, Salts, Clear and Pleasant Danger, Patriot Games, Blind Fury, one of my personal favorites. He would go on to have a hell of a career. And the story is from April Campbell Jones and her husband, Bruce Jones. Bruce Jones, known for working great runs on the Hulk and Kazar. And most importantly to me, the teleplay was by Gary Ross. Gary Ross has four Academy Award nominations. He did Pleasantville, Seabiscuit, Hunger Games, Ocean's 8. Like, this guy's become one of the best and most successful writer-directors in Hollywood. So this has super strong genetics behind this episode. I don't know how the hell it ended up being what it is.
Well, Nick, tell us what it is.
Well, this one actually has a woman that likes to fantasize in the tub, and we see a graphic scene that is quite good and nice, and we sort of learn moving on that
she's masturbating, folks.
Yeah, she outside of the tub, she doesn't like any of the guys hitting on her. She doesn't like the stalkers. She doesn't like any of the creepy guys coming up to her, and they're all pretty creepy. But as the show goes on, it becomes clear that her fantasies are becoming more, both more violent and predictive. They're predicting real life events. So she sort of figures out that there's a serial killer called the Carnation Killer in her city, and her fantasies are involved with this killer somehow. So she contacts the police, and there's a police guy who either just wants to sleep with her or is willing to believe her. And then she finds a spot. One of the killings is going to take place. And just sort of hangs out there. And then she sort of gets a choice of which guy in real life she's going to hook up with. And she picks the killer. I understood none of this. Every choice she could have made in this was problematic. And I'm not good with any of them. And the one she made was the worst one.
That's true. But he was the most handsome. That's...
Yeah, as long as he looks cool without his glasses. But if he takes off his glasses, you're dead.
There's so much that doesn't make sense and is unexplained in this. They just don't bother. Like, how she's having premonitions and why, you know?
They could have just had him pick up the coronation, and it was pretty clear he was a killer. But the hitchhiker comes in and actually just says, yeah, he was the killer.
Well, yeah, it's the most unsatisfying ending. Like, if people were unsatisfied with the ending of Game of Thrones, watch this. You won't be like this. Yeah, is a whole other level.
You could be that disappointed, but in 22 minutes.
Yes. And it was weird because I was hating the ending I thought they were gonna have, where she runs away from the killer and she runs in the arms of the stalker and she picks him. But she picks the killer. And she knows he's the killer.
Well, she's like sitting there at the end going, make love to me, make love to me. And the killer's like, haha, gonna have sex and then make love and then kill her. And then it just ends. There's no her trying to get away. Like, she's just, this woman's dead. And this guy's not caught, and there's nothing satisfying about this ending in one anyway. It just happens. The second that the hitchhiker steps in, like, she's walking away with this killer, the Carnation Killer. She's walking away with him, and he grabs a carnation as they're walking past and just steals it from this flower shop, and coincidentally it's there, and just hides it behind his back, you know, because he's gonna kill her. And then the hitchhiker walks in, and I'm literally going, well, that's weird for the hitchhiker to come in way before the film's over. And then he just basically says, "Yeah, she picked the killer. She dumb choice," and it's over. What the hell?
I looked away for a second, and I heard her like, you know, make love to me, and then I heard the hitchhiker talking. I'm like, fuck, did I miss? I missed the ending. Like, and I go back, like, oh, he picked up a flower. That was the entire ending. Okay, now I get it.
And the rest of it, why was she having premonitions and seeing these people in her when she was basically she would think about men and get horny? And like one time it happens while she's doing a workout for self-defense with a bunch of other women. She just goes into this world where she sees a killer and sees him killing somebody while somebody she was, you know, it makes no sense. Like it, and they don't bother explaining it.
And
maybe they thought that was the point. Not explaining it would create more mystery and create more intrigue and make it work. It didn't.
Do you guys think the filmmakers actually meant us to think that she knew he was the killer and that was her fantasy?
I don't know. I really don't know.
I feel like no, but it's better than their answer. So.
How did people who are so successful in Hollywood make this? And let's talk about the acting. A little over the top.
Some rough stuff there. Yeah.
Like this is some of the, like all the hitchhikers have this surreal kind of filming that's done no matter who the director is. It's like they're like you can direct it, but we're gonna put Vaseline on the camera no matter what, and so that it has this weird I don't know aesthetic.
Yeah,
but and it's present here. It is in all the Hitchhiker films. But the acting, like, it makes you appreciate Gary Busey and how what a good actor he was, because he overcame that.
Now, I'd like to defend the acting a little bit. Marilyn Hassett, our protagonist in this, she can masturbate on screen better than I've ever seen.
This is true. She had that part down. Like, it's like she had done practice.
That's method right there.
Method, yes, method. But other than that, like, the acting is so over the top. Everybody's so extremely... like loud for no reason and talking loudly and it's just terrible acting and again we came from shortly just two seasons ago we were doing Masters of Horror, which is a similar concept in some ways, you know, and has some similarities but it has much better production values. And I don't know if that's because it has just a bigger budget or if it's because, you know, it was more modern and so technology had advanced. But man, I'm starting to appreciate Masters of Horror.
I'm glad we did the whole series of Masters of Horror, for sure.
There may be something just about the half hour format of The Hitchhiker that's proving problematic.
Yeah, I mean, Twilight Zone, for most of its run, was a half hour. Twilight Zone was built around, like, work back from your twist ending. So essentially, you're telling short stories. But this feels like maybe it was a longer script that they're like, oh, this is only a 25-minute show. So can you just take out the middle and the end? We'll just have a first act.
Well, the thing is, Twilight Zone had a genius, you know, who was overseeing the thing.
Both times. This doesn't have that. The first two times, yeah. No, it doesn't have that one voice. Rod Serling on the original series and then Joe Straczynski was the showrunner on the 80s series, which was also a half hour. There's some... You mentioned one of you mentioned that he steals the carnation at the end. He just grabs it from the flower place. When she runs into him at the market, he steals a flower there too. And she's upset. He just picks up a flower and hands it to her. And it's like the most romantic thing that's ever happened. I'm like, he literally stole that in front of you.
Yeah, he did. He handed it to her when she wouldn't let him in. Like, he was obviously planning to kill her that night, but she wouldn't let him into the apartment. So she's like, it's just too fast. Things have been too crazy lately, blah, blah, blah. So he hands her, but it's not a carnation. It's a rose. Maybe he wasn't planning to kill her that night. Like, I can't tell.
Well, actually, he gives her that at the store. He gives her the rose at the store. And then when they get to the door, he gives it to her again. Or it's a second rose. Like, I don't know if he took it. Did he take it back so he can give it to her again? She's on like a fifth floor walk up. He walked her to her door. I have no idea why that happened. If she wasn't going to have him in for a cocktail, like, why did he go further than her front door?
There is a possibility that she's the killer and the guy's a figment of her imagination.
Oh, I like that a lot.
That makes more sense than anything I saw there.
Oh, yeah.
Any of the actual reasonable explanations of this thing in the thing itself.
I like it.
If you had written this, Nick, it would be, that's a couple times you've come up with stuff that's far improved from them. If you had written this episode, I think it would have worked. That theory is wonderful and complete bunk. Like, there's no way.
Guess what? I stole it from something else. I wonder if you guys can guess what it was.
I have a guess.
That's just for her. I do not recall.
No, it would be something coming up very shortly that had the same director and had the same Bruce Jones and his wife writing it.
Even though this was 1986, it still feels like it was written by an incel. So the main character is a woman who wants an imaginary person and all of these nice guys that want to spend time with her. She just,
I hope you had air quotes around the nice guys. Because as I kind of wanted to do, like, she has lots of options available thing. None of the guys were nice. They were all creepy.
It's the serial killer or the super creepy cop. The super creepy cop or the serial killer isn't a hell of a lot of choices. Early in the game, and she said that she's not interested in dating to one of her girlfriends because she doesn't want, because they're all either wimps, creeps, or I think she said emotionally unavailable.
Yeah, can't show their emotions,
can't show their emotions, you know, maybe a wimp is what you need. Like...
I think it's
hanging out by her door, like nose against the panel. He might have been peeking through the peephole. I don't. I just the guys were creepy. That's all.
See, what? I mean, that guy you could frame as he's just doing her a favor. He's bringing her mail to her.
I can't remember. Are you doing Canada spotting in this one?
Oh, we do have 6 Degrees of Littlest Hobo. Robin Ward, who played some character named Tony, I think that was the neighbor. Did 2 episodes of Littlest Hobo in 1985, so just the year before this. Canada spotting is a little tougher on this because it's, I mean, even shot in Vancouver. I mean, it's still 40 years ago. So
good point.
Did you get the sense she was supposed to have money? Because the building she lived in definitely gave me, like, you're the really poor in Vancouver vibes.
Well, she worked for a bank. Remember, I mean, there was the other plot, subplot.
Yeah,
the
just
other
her attitude sort of said Heidi, like, she was upper echelon. Just her home was in like a bad neighborhood, so I thought that was weird.
This is true. I mean, it is a fifth floor walk up. That's not for a loan officer in a bank. That's not, I suppose, what you would think that they would be. Did they mention, did I get this right, the guy that she turned down for the loan, who got all angry at her and was supposed to be a red herring, so you think that he's the killer, but you never thought he was the killer. Did they say that she dated him at one point?
I don't think so. Because she tells that story, but then I think after that she's talking about the neighbor. The neighbor keeps trying to ask her out. I think.
Oh, that's right. There's the neighbor.
Yeah. Because he's the first one that that says like, let's hang out, and she's like, he's a really nice guy, but you know, the whole, it's the 1980s. She wants someone who's macho, but also in touch with their feelings. I think you're really limited to Donald Sutherland at that point. I don't know. There's not a long list of people that fit both of those in the mid 80s.
No, there really isn't. Yeah, I think what we're all saying is don't watch this one.
You could probably take a pass on this. There's one little bit I want to hit on because it made me laugh so much. So she's looking for a professional opinion on her premonitions. And she goes, she's talking to this guy, and she's like, I want to talk to a doctor or a professor or something. And he puts on a lab coat. He says, I'm a doctor. And then so she's like, what's going on? And he's just like, don't worry about it. You have visions. You can predict the future. It's just a thing that happens. Like, just
yes, ignore it. Yeah.
He just completely accepts the reality that she's seeing the future and does not care.
Yeah, you also got the feeling that maybe she had come to him with other problems in the past. So.
Either way, he's not necessarily a good doctor. Any doctor that goes, tell me your problems, and then goes, don't worry, your problems don't seem like a big deal, he's probably not that good a doctor. You know, and the fact that we're talking about psychic premonition is not exactly the type of thing that you hear often. In fact, in my entire life, I've had nobody tell me that they can can do that. So I wouldn't be just like, oh, happens to certain people.
I love that. Just like, that happens. You know, that's a thing that happens.
Yeah. So the guy who wrote this teleplay would go on to be nominated for 4 Academy Awards. Just thought I'd say that again.
And if you visit the TV Hall of Fame, this episode, the napkin he wrote it on is in there.
Wow.
This was quite a thing. Also, we wanted some more mature content after doing a season of cartoons. There are 2 separate having a bath masturbating scenes that do not show boobies.
I noticed.
I mean, what do you
trust
like,
me? I
what,
noticed.
What's the point if that's you can?
Why bother? You can
do, why is yeah?
There's some side boob.
Is this the? I mean, I'm sure you're telling like feminist treatise here. So you don't want to. It's not like the villain of the piece is her for not liking it of the nice guys and going for the handsome one. Oh man, this was a weird one.
Yeah.
We watch them so you don't have to. If you are watching along, keep watching along. We're going to think of this will be the gully. All right. Anything else we want to do on this one?
Nope.
All right. So we are the Cult Film Showdown. You can follow us on Instagram and on YouTube. And you can support us on Patreon. And we are sponsored by WeTalkPodcast.com, the home of the Octagon, where we search for the ultimate B movie. And We Talk Podcasts has a Facebook and they have an X. You can reach the X at twitter.com. And we'll be back next time with another season 3 episode or season 17, depending on which list you're looking at. And it's called Man's Best Friend. If you do visit the Cult Film Showdown channel on YouTube, there's a playlist that has all 10 episodes we'll be doing this season, so you can be listening ahead or watching ahead. You can listen to us after you've watched ahead. And we will
move on.
Yeah. Yeah, like that's just, 40 or 50 times that I've done this. I'm expecting one of these to be the take that we'll use.